Inconceivable!
Hey, Doc, we better back up. We don't have enough road to get up to you.
Welcome again to the Good Trash Genre Cast, where we talk about genre movies, the lesser films.
It's like Beauty and the Beast up there.
Yes, it is. The single rose. We are also gawking at the architecture of Studio D, that is my home. We're gathered here looking at genre movies and cult movies and applying some film theory and elevating the discussion of the less than elevated films. Introductions are first and foremost. My name is Dustin Sells. I study movies at the University of Central Oklahoma. And to my left is...
Dalton Stewart. I was given a degree for studying society at the University of Central Oklahoma.
And to my right...
I am Arthur Gordon, and I no longer look like a teen wolf.
No, he does not.
He's nice and trimmed.
They shaved Aslan.
Yeah, it's so weird. Arthur does this thing where he goes in cycles, where he lets his hair and his beard just grow out to these like gargantuan proportions, and then shaves them, just like shaves his head, trims his beard to almost to nothingness. It's weird. Scary. I like it.
I dig it.
Also, it's thrilling.
You always look quite handsome, sir, and we're so glad to have you back. I hope you had a happy birthday.
Well, did you?
I did. It was good. Went to B-dubs and then saw Pacific Rim.
Excellent.
I think we'll talk about that a little later on in the show.
Might bear a mention.
Now, how old are you now?
27.
That's
younger than Dustin.
I just wanted to make sure.
For the record, that doesn't change.
I did not advance at all.
I mean,
You know what we're here to do, though? We're here to talk about Teen Wolf.
We are here to talk, unfortunately.
Which is from one of Dustin's favorite decades, the 80s.
I mean, he was,
Let's keep the old
one. I was born in 90, so.
I hit 86, so I caught the last in.
Yeah.
I got the good years. Of the
you were like a boy, right? You were full on youth in the 80s.
With Wham posters.
I could have seen the theatrical release of this film.
Okay, just making sure.
I'm sorry.
Did you?
I saw it on VHS.
Did you see the theatrical release of Back to the Future?
Same year? Back to the Future 2, I did.
Okay, cool. Let's talk about this piece of shit.
Let's do. Teen Wolf is the film. Again, we are going to do our quick reviews and all that stuff, but this is an analysis show. But before we do anything, we do warn the listener, because of analysis, we are going to talk about the movie. But in case you haven't seen it and you just want an idea of what it is we could possibly be talking about, I'm trying to stall for time as Arthur Gordon.
In case you're wondering, Dustin's right. We know review shows try to avoid spoilers. We're not a review show. We're an analysis show. But for those of you who are curious, there is, in fact, a teen who is a wolf in this film called Teen Wolf.
There you have it.
Pretty spelled out in the title.
Yeah, I mean, it's literally the most...
It is what it says on the tin.
And this wolf, this boy wolf gets nicknamed
Teen Wolf.
T.W.
T.W. Styles.
They didn't just like slip the title into dialogue. They just
it is plastered throughout the film. Like the second act of the film is Teen Wolf is probably said about 30.
I don't know
times.
Who Styles guy is, but he gets merchandise quickly.
Yes, he does.
Real fast. Later. They got a truck. I'm sorry. Go
and
ahead.
Like three shirts. He has a concession stand of Teen Wolf merch.
He does.
It's pretty awesome.
Styles is a hell of a merch guy.
Yeah.
Well, we begin as we do, though, with the voice of the cinema. Welcome back. We had to deal with the voice of the Dollar Theater last week.
You're welcome.
Who did a monster
truck? Was the voice of the monster truck show.
So, Mr. Arthur Gordon, if you would, that synopsis, please.
A high schooler discovers... that he is a werewolf.
Is that all? Is that it? Are you kidding me? See? Did I not tell you? Dear listener, did I not tell you? Oh my god, I think we just blew out our sound.
This movie's pitiful, and we all know it.
God.
We begin with our thumbs up, thumbs down. What works, what doesn't work? I begin to my right, because it's his fault, it was his birthday, therefore his pick. Mr. Arthur Gordon, what say you, sir?
Before the D18 comes down, I would like the dear listener to know there was a choice, but they went with Teen Wolf. I won't let you know what the other one was.
Mystery.
Regardless, the mystery movie that may come up some other day, if we're ever popular enough to afford it. I'm going to say it, two thumbs up. I love this movie, and I think it's something it's a theme that has become, I think, rampant in the show, it's a movie that I've loved since childhood and wore out the VHS. And so I think for some odd reason it is near and dear to my heart.
Your parents let you watch this film as a child?
My kid.
Over and over.
Yeah.
Mine did
on VHS.
Too, but not on repeat. Yeah.
And it was a good time. I do like the fact that we get a man wolf instead of a man who just turns into a wolf.
Yeah.
Like some werewolves and wolf people become.
Mm-hmm.
Some films that are better.
That's sort of the hunching wolf beast.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I prefer this, and it's kind of a throwback to the wolf man,
wolf
the universal man. Style of
yeah.
werewolf. And I like his creature design. I think it's fun. I don't like his dad. His dad looks like a hamster.
Yes, he
or
does.
Or a gerbil of some
definitely
sort.
Definitely rodentia.
But I do like creature design. I love the soundtrack. It's the horribly 80s, terribly 80s synth and cheesy pop and...
Mm-hmm.
But I think all in all, this is a package deal that's totally just near and dear to my heart.
Okay.
From the get-go. So. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Mr. Arthur Gordon. Mr. Dalton Stewart,
well,
you give the correct analysis.
Arthur, I'm sorry. I'm about to shoot a silver bullet right through your heart, but this movie is a giant steaming pile of 80s
werewolf humor.
Awfulness. I want to run over this film, shoot it with a silver bullet, back up over the film, set it on fire, freeze it, then bury it, and go watch another Michael J. Fox movie. A better one.
Anyone.
Any anything. Casualties of War with Sean Penn. I'll watch that. I've never even seen it. I saw this movie for the first time. I was probably 12, 13, maybe even younger than that. And I remember liking this film, oddly. Like, I thought, yes, you know, this movie's awful.
There's a time of innocence
and what,
before you have any opinions of
what kind of movie is this even supposed to... Is this supposed to be a comedy? Because I didn't laugh, like, at all. This movie is not good. It's bad. It's
not,
legitimately bad. Like...
I think it falls into a sports movie coming of age more than anything.
I don't know if any of you know off the top of your head how many films I've not liked on this show. Probably not a whole lot.
No.
I tend to
probably
find...
Probably five or less, I'd say.
I'd say it's not even... Maybe three. And even the ones I don't like, I find redeeming qualities in. This movie has no redeeming qualities. This is legitimately the worst film we've ever watched for this show. Terrible. Awful. It's a giant steaming pile of garbage, and I hated it. We'll get into more of why I didn't like it.
Well, thank you for that reined-in opinion, Mr. Dalton Stewart. We really appreciate
I'm
that.
I'm so angry at you, Arthur.
And all I remember thinking was, I have now seen the inspiration for Mr. Dalton Stewart's fashion sense as I watched the young Michael
Styles. I will say this, Styles. Styles knows how to dress. That is a man.
He's got that name for a reason.
He's got a good jacket. He's got good sunglasses. He's got some smarmy t-shirts. He's got some well-fitting jeans. He's a classic guy.
So Styles is his redeeming quality.
That's pretty much the only good thing about this movie.
Oh, you know, he would have raid occasionally Marty's flannel shirts.
You know, I liked the scene where Styles tries to buy the keg of beer as a truck driver. That was pretty great.
That was pretty funny.
I enjoyed that.
I gotta say, did not love the movie. There is this weird thing that's going on. And I think really here is the problem of the movie. Is it is really shot in a realist sort of style.
Yeah.
But there is no realism to it at all.
Well, it's got that problem that a lot of 80s movies do, where it just looks cheap. Like, some 80s films just don't age well. And I think
it's
lower budget
80s
films.
Well, this is more of a filmmaking question I wanted to ask a while back, and I've never really had a chance, opportunity, but now it's become up. There is a thing, I mean, I'm sure all of us do. There are movies from the 80s you can watch, and you can say that's an 80s movie.
Yes, and this is one of them.
And is there a chain? Like, it's not just low budget. I think there are varying degrees of 80s film that you can watch. Is there a switch from camera format or
film
format or something that causes this appearance?
I think something about practical effects makes a difference.
Okay.
For one thing, it is
and
a
sets,
little,
I'm sure sets
shade.
And things.
Yeah.
But I think Arthur's specifically talking about the image itself, because I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah.
I think it might be a question. I don't know if there's a like. Was film stock in the 80s just shitty? It was like, because of the oil crisis and film stock wasn't as good?
Silver nitrate shortage.
Listener, if any of you know anything about 35mm and the history of filmmaking, please tell us, because I agree with Arthur. And I think 70 movies to some extent also.
Probably, I would say it's probably late 70s, like probably 78 to the end, up to probably 86 to 87. Because once you get into Batman, 88, 89, you get that shift while we know through the
night. Weird, like washed out color.
Yeah,
like it's like the color was.
So maybe a lighting thing. I don't know. Maybe a studio thing.
Because I watched. Well, there's another '80s film that came out the same year as this. It's going to come up later that I watched recently. Looks perfect. Looks like it was made yesterday. I mean, it looks fantastic. So I don't know. Weird. But anyway.
As I was saying, the reason why I hate this movie is...
maybe you can give it a more measured opinion than I can.
Is this lack of balance. There was an opportunity to make this a fairy tale, to make this some sort of fable, but they didn't do that. They didn't really try to achieve in it. They tried to achieve, this is just slice of life high school.
Yeah.
Except for, you know, overtop performance and all that. But the realism itself completely falls apart. Obviously, if one student randomly turns into a wolf during a basketball game...
You think people lose their shit.
Something different would happen.
Why does no one seem to care that he's a werewolf?
Then...
People are so okay that... I love it. They're so okay with the existence of werewolves in this town. Where is this place? Is this Sunnydale? Are they on the hell now?
Fun story. This is the same town the McFlys live in, according to IMDb.
Are you kidding me?
Oh, Hill Valley?
Apparently.
This is supposed to be Hill Valley.
Apparently, like, the street that they live on is the same street that Marty's mom lived on in 1955.
Crazy.
Apparently. This is trivia from IMDb.
Yeah.
Maybe it was just shot on the same street. So
but even simpler stuff. For instance, there is a line Michael J. Fox delivers to Mick, the big, you know, bully guy, about, yeah, man, one more foul and you're out. He fouls him and stays in the stupid basketball game.
Yeah.
You know, we've talked much about, you know, maybe our lack of understanding of the sports ball, but I know a little bit about basketball, and none of it happened. In the court. Jump ball, I mean, it was terribly unrealistic.
Probably does for basketball what I always understood that my dad would say that Rocky did with boxing.
Just
completely throws out any realism of the sport.
There's a
point where someone gets clotheslined and nobody gets kicked out.
I say one thing positive.
It's the last game.
You're right,
gets clotheslined.
The one positive thing is Joseph Loeb III is a famous Batman writer.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. He wrote
the screenplay for this.
What?
Cinematic.
Loeb?
Yeah.
The writer of
Long
Halloween.
Yeah, that guy.
And Dark Victory.
That guy.
Wrote this. Wow,
wrote this
he's
movie.
Way better writing comic books.
He wrote this movie also.
Joe, stick to your day job.
Yeah. Well, this was his day job. This is his first job.
This is
stick to
Long
your
Halloween.
Night job.
This is his breakout moment.
Man, I'm so glad things turned up for you.
And but I will just say, you know, because of our love of the bat, we are the Sons of the Bat on this show, and
forever and always.
So there is
Amen.
A connection there that is at least somewhat worthwhile. All right, well, there you go. You know where we're coming from as we bring our very measured, you know, unbiased bull analysis.
Mm-hmm.
And so analysis is I can try to say this word out loud today.
You says it.
I says it as I can, Mr. Arthur Gordon. What analysis do you bring, sir? Since you picked the movie.
I'm not going to lie. I mean, it's obviously a film with many, many, many flaws. That's fair, but I still love it. Regardless, I think you're hitting on one of the things, that fairy tale idea. I mean, it's...
Could have been.
It's kind of this coming-of-age story, you know? I mean, he's going through puberty, and we get this obviously over-exaggerated fact that he's a werewolf. You know, so we kind of have that, I think, playing in the background.
Yeah, it's an analog for puberty in a lot of ways.
Well, wolves,
but
I mean, werewolves themselves are,
one
right?
of the things
True.
That I think becomes a problem here is... Usually with this kind of major shift, I mean, for the character arc he's going through, you know, he becomes an outright douchebag as the wolf.
Right.
We're going to talk about that.
And normally, there's some morality issue here, you know, maybe it's a guise of drug abuse, or maybe it's a guise of steroids. I mean, I can't see anything that this is maybe similar. Like, he's not, I mean, he's winning games, they win a championship, you know, there's no... negative, really. Nobody really ever turns on him except the basketball team.
Yeah.
Booth never fully turns on him because she can have those moments with Scott. There's a lot of flaws in the story there.
Booth wanted the wolf D.O.
She even got it.
Booth was into it, yo. I'm just saying.
She's a lady of the street, though.
I liked Booth a lot.
It's the
I instantly thought I was like
it's the Ginger Marianne thing though.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I like Marianne.
Yeah. Maybe.
What was the other girl's name in this movie? I don't even
Pam.
Pam was not. I don't understand 80s movies.
Classic.
I really don't. Pam.
Blonde.
The Well, I'll get to mine now.
Yeah, blondes with big chins happen a
lot
in the 80s.
It's fair. the other thing, this movie takes a lot of things and flips them.
Mm-hmm.
We have a small town school,
sort of,
where basketball is a joke. You go to any salt, at least in Oklahoma, small towns love their sports. They are fanatic about their sports.
And hence another reason why the realism. Right. But
go ahead. Here we have five people in the auditorium.
Small town.
Hmm?
I mean, it's suburbs, right? It feels small town to you?
It could have been.
Well, the hardware store.
Yeah,
you know,
okay.
I mean, that idea. Right. It's got that picturesque.
Everybody
downtown.
Knew each other. It kind of had an Elm Street,
you
Elmwood kind of thing.
So we've got this idea. The most popular girl in school, we can assume, the most beautiful,
the
hottest girl.
The girl's busted looking.
Is
Oop
a
is way more attractive than, I'm sorry.
Theater girl.
That is true.
She's not a cheerleader. She's the lead in the school play.
Yeah.
He's probably going to try and go wind up on a casting couch in Hollywood in 5 years.
Theater kids know how to party, man.
that's fair. You know, the heart and soul of the basketball team is a loser. So they're taking a lot of conventions.
Scrawny Canadian.
I think of sports film and high school film and kind of flipping them. What's normal in high school film is not normal here.
Whatever helps you
We're in the
night.
Twilight Zone in Teen Wolf here.
Mm-hmm.
That's one word for it. Well, you know, I think it's fair in some regards, though.
So, but I enjoy it a lot.
Okay.
I love it.
Well,
it's a very monochromatic town as well.
That's perfect, because that's my analysis.
Pick up the ball.
Let's talk about how racist Teen Wolf is. Shall we? Now, full disclosure, some of these ideas are not my own. The thesis of where I'm coming from is thanks to a video on crack.com, their After Hours video series, and their most recent video, Three Terrible Lessons from 80s Sports Movies.
They call Teen Wolf a sports movie.
Well, it was actually all Rocky, but they interjected with other examples of 80s sports films to help back up to talk about Rocky. So let's talk about how racist this movie and Rocky 3 are, and Rocky 4. But mostly, let's talk about how racist Teen Wolf is. Michael J. Fox, God love him, Canadian, beautiful, very charismatic actor, is a dork in this movie, I think we can agree.
Yeah.
He's kind of a dweeb. Until he becomes the wolf. And can we talk about how black the wolf is? Because the wolf represents everything that white America is traditionally feared from black people. Sexually aggressive, more sexually potent than white men, more physically adept than white men, cooler than white men, just better than white men, basically. And that's what the Teen Wolf is. Better than everyone else in this freaking white bread town where there's no other black people.
And you can
there's
bust
literally,
a pretty nice
There's
move.
Literally three black guys in this movie. They're all basketball players, and none of them have a single line.
He makes a
This is a racist movie.
I don't even think they're basketball players on
They're
the
on
team.
The other team, too.
Yeah.
They're not even... They
there's
don't
the,
even go to
There's one
school.
Guy at the school. He walks by in the hallway, and they breakdance.
That's right. Breakdance. See? Breakdance.
And the wolf breakdances.
And the wolf breakdances with them. You know why? Because the Teen Wolf's black. And what does Marty McFly learn? He learns to trust his inner white person that the wolf is no good, that the wolf brings nothing but danger and violence and sexual aggression.
He's an animal.
How does he win? Not through skill, not through pizzazz, but through shitty fundamental basketball that's boring to watch.
Shoot it, fat boy. Just shoot it.
For an even better, for a more in-depth analysis of this, though, I again point you to the site that gave me this idea and made me look at the film through this lens, After Hours, the Cracked video series. I also do want to talk about this film generically as a 80s film. I can tell you at the beginning of this film how this film was going to end. Are you ready? As soon as he blows off Booth, I go, okay, here's how this film ends. He learns something about himself that he didn't know before. He has to overcome this thing. This thing will come between him and the people he cares about. He will try to win the girl and fail, but then he will succeed. But then realize the popular girl was not the girl for him all along. After he accepts his inner self, he will realize that the person for him was Boo. This is the
Don't
plot.
You.
This is the plot to The Breakfast Club. This is the plot to 16 Candles. This is the plot to The New Guy, starring DJ Qualls from about 98, 99. This is the plot to pretty
Everything.
Much every high school movie And college movies. Most college movies, too.
Fish out of water movies.
Ever. Yes. Period. And that, to some extent, just shows you, if only to demonstrate how versatile the genre is, I think Teen Wolf works in that regard. Because it can show you how versatile that template of the school film is, of the coming of age, the young adult, drama, D, you know, comedy, drama, whatever. They all have the same story arc for the most part. So I guess there's that.
There is that. Is there more?
No, it's just boring and racist. That's it. I was bored. I don't get bored during movies very often.
Oh, no.
I was so bored. And that creature design looks like garbage. It looks like he's got a ZZ Top beard glued onto his face. I'm done.
Are you done now?
Yeah, stick a fork in me.
Okay, well, you know, I gotta say, the movie's awful, obviously, clearly, no doubt. And I did love seeing Mark Holton, Oklahoma City's own Mark Holton, also known as Francis in Pee-wee's Big Adventure.
Who is he in this?
He is Chubbs.
Oh, wow. Oh,
okay.
So,
maybe. I've seen him in other things.
I called him John Goodman Jr. Through watching this.
Chubbs is very thin in the face. Did you notice that?
I know. Anyway, he is.
You have to eat this entire bowl of Jello.
So we have a local.
I'm
actor.
Into that. Yeah.
The movie, as far I actually watched it twice, Arthur.
What?
Arthur?
Did you watch it twice just to make sure it was as bad as you thought it was?
I watched it the first time and I thought this movie is empty, vacuous, and meaningless.
Yes.
And so I watched it again
to try and find something.
And I conclude that it is still empty, vacuous, and meaningless. I mean, there are moments where it almost could be something.
No.
Aside from your racist reading, which again is probably a cross reading. Yeah,
You know, I think the subtext is there pretty strongly. I mean, I don't think the movie meant to do that, but I think it shows an underlying attitude.
Well, they decided, how do we make him awesome? And everything they thought of fell in within those kind of black American.
Being black is awesome.
Right. And we are pro-black on the good track.
Well, black culture. Let me rephrase that. Black culture is awesome. Being black has its downsides.
Well, there are problems there. Yeah. So, you know, we do live in a nation with a history, and we're working through that. See the Django episode for more information on that.
Yeah, we talk a lot about that, actually.
So I watched it, and I was somewhat aware of the crackle, or the crack thing. Crackle. It's a different streaming service. And I thought, well, no.
Oh, you'd seen the video I talked about?
No, I was aware of it, though.
Oh, okay.
And so I thought, okay, well, there's that. And then I thought, well, you know, you got this kind of Marxist thing, right? Where he kind of becomes like, you know, werewolves are kind of like the low-end proletarian sort of movie monsters. And he's doing everything to keep everybody cool and keep the basketball team going. And he's then, like, strike, right? And he's going to quit. Except for he just keeps doing it not the same way. So it completely fails to do that. And then I thought, oh, it's about being yourself. Being who you are. And then I realized, no, it's about repressing who you are so you can look like everybody else. And that's when I decided, not only is this film empty, meaningless, and vacuous, it is a complete, absolute mess and unworthy of anyone's time. I'm sorry, Arthur, I love you. I don't love this movie.
I love him less now.
But it is so... I think I might like it less than The Faculty.
I like this movie less. I'm trying to think of films I didn't like. Creepshow. And even Creepshow I liked.
Some
of. Hellraiser. And even Hellraiser, I kind of, like, there are things about it I thought were cool.
We'll draw swords on that one.
I know. It's fine. You know, I like Hellraiser. This is a piece of shit, guys. I don't throw bandy about words like that. Like, I don't degrade a film completely. Like, I don't try to, like, diminish it. You know, I try to let a film speak for itself. This really just is a bad movie. It's not well made. It's not interesting. It's just boring and sad.
There is the fun of the 80s. And that is all I can say. Mm-hmm. Is that there is something about the 80s. You know, Michael J. Fox's weird Thriller dance is kind of hilarious.
Not to Thriller, because they clearly couldn't get the rights to play Thriller. Yeah,
right.
I loved that.
So that was fun, you know, of itself. There are gags. I laughed. I mean, I don't know. Dalton apparently did not.
I chuckled a couple times, like twice.
But, yeah, it is...
High school parties are weird.
Yeah.
In movie high school parties?
Especially in the 80s.
I've been to a lot of high school parties. None look like that. I didn't see a party like that till like, the end of college. And even that wasn't that.
Never.
Never seen a party like that?
No.
No.
Doesn't happen.
I mean, it does. It's
probably in a frat house, maybe.
I've never been to a frat party. Are you kidding me? Please.
So,
I'm better than that.
There goes the analysis. Let's do what we do now. Shelf or trash, else or instead. I begin to my right for the solitary vote. Shelf or trash, Mr. Arthur Gordon, else or instead.
Shelf.
Clearly.
You go on the shelf, and you're going to watch this.
With?
Back to the Future.
Oh, my goodness. Yes, much better.
And I say, let's go back down the paranormal route. Let's watch The Frighteners.
Good call. All
right.
Good call. I like those. Mr. Dalton Stewart.
This film should be eaten by a better werewolf movie, let's say An American Werewolf in London. Passed through the werewolf's, digestive system, made into a bowel movement, and then put in the trash. Instead, you should watch Back to the Future, actually. I watched Back to the Future yesterday as part of the... We were talking about this before we started recording as part of the Summer Classic series that was done at Tinseltown here in Oklahoma City. Man, Back to the Future is great. And that was the film I was talking about. It looks great. It looks wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
And granted, it was remastered, but it's still the film stock, the quality of it's great. Back to the Future is a literally timeless film. Like, I can't believe how well that movie holds up. It's fantastic.
I like the movie a lot.
You know what's not fantastic? Teen Wolf.
Teen Wolf.
Same year. Maybe, I don't know, not take a break from family ties, MJ. Maybe just leave for Back to the Future. Eric Stoltz should have been in this piece of crap.
So I will say this. I will also say trash. I mean, it probably is in somewhere along that Troll 2 kind of level with me right now. Where
do you think Troll 2 is bad, dude? Have you seen Troll 2?
It's not as bad.
Troll
2
doesn't even make sense.
But it's so much fun to watch because of how bad it is. And if you had a group of people together... I'm thinking a couch full of friends and food and snacky things. I think a good time would be had by all.
Okay.
And I will say that is the only elevating in its level of the sediment of my trash can that I'm going to give that particular...
This movie is some next level garbage.
So what should you watch instead? I would say watch The Breakfast Club instead.
Agreed.
If you want a teen movie. And if you want a funny horror kind of mashup mix up, I'm going to say The First Nightmare on Elm Street. Freddy's hilarious.
In the first one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, he's funnier in Fred Nightmare on Elm Street, too.
Yeah, he kind of hits a stride in 3. Go with 1.
Go with that. You see some faces that you recognize, and that's a lot of fun.
It's a much better 80s movie.
And it's a much better 80s teeny movie with a little bit of scary, where people react in a somewhat more believable, I say somewhat, more believable sort of way.
Skip
so,
2.
Those are my recommendations. All right. Well, let's move on to our game. First and foremost, because we just did a werewolf film.
Yes. I'm sorry, I just trailed off and started thinking about how bad Nightmare on Elm Street 2 is. Do you remember what Nightmare on Elm Street 2 is about? Freddy possesses a boy. His target becomes a male instead of, I forget the female lead in one's her character.
It's not Nancy.
Nancy. Nancy goes somewhere else. I don't know if they couldn't get the actress back. The protagonist of 2 is a guy that... teenage boy that moves into Nancy's old house, and Freddy possesses him and like tries to enter the physical realm through this boy and transforming him. It's bad.
I don't remember the numbers.
It's bad.
I wonder if you're incorrect.
That's Freddy's Revenge, I think. It's bad. No, I'm not incorrect. I've seen it recently.
Okay.
It's bad. Go 3. Sorry.
Well, dear listener, before we move on to our games, tell us what you think of Teen Wolf. Please let Arthur know. He checks the Facebook. Where is the Facebook page, Mr. Arthur Gordon?
Oddly enough, you can find it on facebook.com/goodtrashgenrecast.
Mm-hmm.
One word, that's how I say it.
I did not manage to say it nearly so silkily as when I got a chance to say the Facebook last week.
He's just got the velvet pipes, man.
He does. All right, we're going to move on to our game. We just watched a werewolf movie. And so we want to talk about our favorite werewolves. I begin to my left, Mr. Dalton Stewart. Favorite werewolves, and why? Go.
I actually just talked about, American Werewolf in London. Really?
John Landis has got the stuff.
That's pretty much, that is, to me, the pinnacle of werewolf movies, I think. It's just good stuff. It's funny that it's a really kind of a tragic film in a lot of ways. Here's a fun fact, since we're talking about... Back to the Future. Back to the Future. One of the ways Marty knows he's in back in 1985, Hill Valley, is that there's a porno theater in the middle of the town.
Oh, right.
And the film playing in the theater is Orgy American Style. That is the film that's playing in the climax of American Werewolf in London.
Nice.
They find themselves in the porno theater. It's the film is called, I don't know if it's actual the name of the film, but the marquee outside says Orgy American Style. So, there's a fun bit of movie trivia for you. But yeah, man, it's for me, it's all about American Werewolf in London. Not American Werewolf in Paris, don't. Bad.
That's the one from like the 90s.
It's like 98. I saw it before I saw London. Yeah. It's real bad. So bad. It's weird though. It's like the pseudo prequel sequel thing. It's the same thing studios did before, you know, now, where they had the decency to pretend a film wasn't a remake and pretend it was a sequel when it was just a remake. So, I don't know. I'm trying to think of some other werewolves, though. I would say that the first Underworld film, not bad.
Okay.
It's kind of fun. It was campy, and the action's decent. The other ones are pretty forgettable, but it's good. Yeah. I like werewolves. Werewolves are fun.
Outstanding.
Good. You know what else I'll suggest? I'm trying to just think of a couple of ones I really enjoy. Watch Wolf. Jack Nicholson.
Second movie.
Yeah.
It was on my list.
Classic Wolfman's action, like Arthur's talking about, the not full-on wolf transformation. That's a good one. But that's what I got for you. Those are some good werewolf flicks I enjoy.
Great. Thank you, Dalton. Well, Arthur Gordon, what are your favorite werewolf movies, besides Teen Wolf?
Besides Teen Wolf, that's the honorable mention. I'm not going to go with movies. I'm going to go with wolves in particular.
Okay.
My number three is going to be, there's an episode of Tales from the Crypt, and I can't remember if it's season or not, but the small orphan is taken in by a family, a rich family. And they feed him up. They feed him up real nice and everything, you know. Come to find out, they're vampires. They're raising him. Essentially, they're killing him. It's kind of the way it's going.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
He develops connection with their butler. The butler risks his life to save the kid, that whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
The kid runs out, and the twist ending, you know, he runs out on a starry night. And then the twist ending for this episode, he realizes he transforms into a werewolf.
Oh, he's a werewolf all along.
And as the parents chase him, he turns and he's able to kill them.
Eat the other werewolves.
The vampires.
Oh, they were vampires.
Vampires, yes.
Okay. That's kind of awesome.
It's a story
that's really
stuck with me. I saw it as a kid, and the story has just stuck with me for years.
Good job, Tales from the Crypt.
The second one is going to be Oz from Buffy.
Buffy, yeah.
I love Oz. I love Seth Green's performance. Mm-hmm. I think it's just a great character arc. But my top werewolf of all time is Chaney. It's the Wolfman.
Yeah.
Sympathetic, sad.
Great tragedy, man.
He's the best. I don't know there's ever going to be a werewolf better than Chaney.
Absolutely. Well, you know, my list has actually been named between all of your ones here. My two films was the original Wolfman, Lon Chaney Jr.
Mm-hmm.
Just amazing makeup effects for 1934, I believe.
Yeah,
pretty impressive. 1934. Mind you, guys, they've only been doing sound movies for 6 years. Okay, that's where we're talking as far as the technology goes. And great movie and all that. And I love Jack Nicholson's performance in Wolf,
which is, in a lot of ways, kind of a quasi-remake. I mean, it really follows a lot of similar beats. It's a good movie.
There are bits. There are definitely bits that are very close to it, I think.
Yeah.
And the other thing about that movie, especially, is that it is more about, you know, what's primal inside us. And it's something, I almost think the first hour and a half is a much better movie than the last half.
Yeah, it kind of falls apart in the third act.
And I really wish something different had happened with that conclusion with the film. But, you know, it is what it is.
Well, and it keys in on some of the things
I like
think,
it a lot.
It keys in on some of the things I think that make werewolves interesting as a creature. You talk about the idea of werewolves as this, you know, the proletariat kind of Marxist monster, whereas, you know, your vampires would be your aristocracy. But I think you're right about Wolf, is it does this thing where it kind of keys on this, like, lizard brain, this, you know, this lizard brain thing.
Mm-hmm.
This primal
duality
hunter,
man.
The duality man being this, you know, this this clash between the civilized and the, you know, our animalistic nature. It's a hell of a movie, it really is. I haven't seen it in a while, but I really dig it. I'm glad we agree on that one.
Yeah, awesome. Well, we have one other thing to discuss, inspired by this film as far as our game discussions that kind of go a little broader. We miss seeing Michael J. Fox in movies.
Yeah, we really do.
And he is great. Dalton mentioned his charisma and charismatic acting. And we just want to talk a little bit about actors we miss that we'd like to see a little bit more of. Dalton Stewart, I begin with you.
Why is she going to start with me every time?
I don't know. I start with Arthur half the time.
You know, sometimes I need time to think. You know, we talked about 80s flicks a little bit. When we were banding about what we were going to do with this game, we talked about some 80s movies. And one came to mind when we were talking about 80s movies, 80s high school movies in particular. And it occurred to me, there are a lot of actors that were in 80s high school movies that you don't see at all anymore. And that's really who I keyed in on. Guys like Matthew Broderick. Who I know he does a lot of work on Broadway, and good bully for him. I want to see Matthew in a good flick. You know, he's a perfectly fine actor. Mm-hmm. He's a fun guy. Man, they made leading men short in the '80s.
They did.
Michael J. Fox is a tiny, tiny guy. Mm-hmm. So is Matthew Broderick
and Tom Cruise.
Tom Cruise still acting though. He refuses to be put away. you know, and Judd Nelson. We talked about the Breakfast Club. Actually, basically the entire cast of The Breakfast Club. I want them back. Judd Nelson, fantastic actor. Emilio Estevez, every bit as good, probably better than his brother. Although he's directing now, so that's good. Ally Sheedy, she's great.
Mm-hmm.
Molly Ringwald. Molly Ringwald, she's the best. Just, right. You know, this is the quintessential 80s girl. I mean, probably in some of the best films of that decade. I think some of the best films about what it is to be a teenager. And, you know, and then Michael, Michael C. Hall. Oh, that's Dexter. Crap. Anthony Michael Hall. Jeez, three names.
There you go.
Don't bother me. Anthony Michael Hall, so great. I think the last thing he did was he was a reporter in the Dark Knight movies.
Hmm.
Yeah. He's the bad guy in Edward Scissorhands. You know that?
Oh, is he?
Anthony Michael Hall got buffed.
He's the boyfriend.
Michael Hall got buffed the end of the 80s. He started lifting. But, you know, I love all the entire cast of Breakfast Club. I think that's a great bunch of actors. I really wish they were more movies. You know, some of them are still acting, but none of them are getting a lot of work. And since we talked about Michael J. Fox, I'm going to throw out one more. Lee Thompson.
Yeah. Yeah.
Lorraine! Can we talk for a second about how undeniably, just like how earth-shatteringly gorgeous Lee Thompson is in Back to the Future?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I think we should agree.
Well, all right, I'm done. Trail off.
Well, Dalton's rules. Mr. Arthur Gordon.
Just makes the scene so off-putting.
Who do you miss seeing on screen?
I think I'm going to echo Dalton. I'm going to say Emilio Estevez.
Mm-hmm.
Coach Bombay.
Coach Bombay! Bombay!
There's a soft spot there for him. Fox, obviously. I think, you know... 80s movie isn't really my forte. Kiefer Sutherland, I'd like to do more movies.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Lost Boys, man.
I'd like to see Kiefer in some more movies. I know he had that thing on Fox a few years ago, but that's not...
Apparently that was a good show. I don't know. I never watched it.
I didn't either.
I had interest.
Maybe Christopher Lloyd?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's a good
actor. He does look too schlocky, like made-for-TV movies now. That's all he does.
He's better than that.
He is.
Well, that's what Lea Thompson does. She does, like, Lifetime movies now.
Yeah.
It's weird. These people have moved on to do stuff, but it's just not good stuff.
Yeah.
And there's one person that came to mind instantly when we sent out the text earlier when we were talking about these things. And then you kind of, later you said something living.
Mm-hmm.
You added that. But I think there's one actor who I would love to see today, what his career would have done, and mm-hmm. that's... River Phoenix.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I think it would have been very interesting to see where he was at today.
Yeah.
If you had lived.
So. The dogs are also sad.
They are.
River
Phoenix. They're big Stand By Me fans.
Right.
And Stand By Me had been on Netflix. We would have watched
that. You guys
want
to see a dead body?
My word. No, it's a good movie.
Well, man, the rest of the cast of Stand By Me did okay.
So we
really did. Well, Wheaton's a nerd icon. He's doing fine.
Nerds are in. He's
nerds,
lucky they're in.
Nerds are in, yeah.
Now, again, this game is about who we want to see on screen, not necessarily if they're working or if they're not busy or whatever.
We want to see more movies.
I would love to have seen a whole lot more and would like to see even now a whole lot more Mark Hamill.
Yeah.
Luke Skywalker from the Star Wars films. He did not do much except some very bad... Yes, thank you, Roscoe the dog. He did some very, very poor sequel horror films and... little sci-fi made-for-TV films.
Apparently the Big Red One's really good.
The what?
The Big Red One.
Don't even know this.
It's a war film. He was in Lee Marvin. I forgot who directed it.
All right.
Late 80s. Was real good.
Sounds good to me. But I would love to have seen a lot more of him. Then two female actresses also. One, gets some work. We see her some, but I miss her. Is Winona Ryder.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, since the cameo in the new Star Trek original film.
And a great bit part in Black Swan.
Yeah. But, I mean, really, as far as seeing her as leading lady, you know, in, I miss that and miss that a lot. So I wish more of that. And also, I don't know what happened to this chick. Alicia Silverstone. What happened there? Do you remember 1990 through 95 and she was in everything?
Clueless and...
Joel Schumacher happened.
Is Batman and Robin. That's what happened to Chris O'Donnell, too.
No, that must be it.
Yeah.
Call that Schumacher curse.
That must be it. But, great.
She did all right.
She seemed like she could do, and she was going to be able to really hone her craft, you know.
She's not a bad actress.
She had screen presence, and I thought that all the potentialities are there. But I guess you guys are right. After the Schumacher effect, she just really fell away. And I miss Alicia Silverstone, and I think there's some potential there. I caught her in a Lifetime movie not very long ago.
How was that?
Meh.
Lifetime. Television for victims.
She had cancer. It was sad.
Television for victims, man.
I know. So,
tell you what.
Just is what it is, I suppose. But anyway, that would be my list. Well, that's a good discussion, I think.
Yeah.
We've had about those things. If you'd like to chime in on the discussion, one place that can happen is on the interwebs through some social medium of social media. Dalton Stewart, what's that?
Into every generation, a method of communication is born. One method of communication in all the world. One method of communication alone. A chosen one. That method of communication alone wields strength and skill despite the vampires and demons, the forces of darkness. That method of communication is the Twitter. You're welcome. Ladies and gentlemen, we are located on the Twitter at good_trash. I couldn't think of anything for Teen Wolf. I hated it. Buffy was the best thing I got. Sorry.
That was probably a better call anyhow.
That's
so,
kind of what I thought.
Well, let's do what we do to wrap the show up this week, and that is talk about what's got us fired up in pop culture.
Shall we?
I believe we all are quite fired up. Mr. Arthur Gordon, what's got you fired up this week in pop culture?
Oh, off the top of my head, as I mentioned earlier in the show, at the beginning of the show, last week, my birthday, I saw Pacific Rim.
Things will be said.
And I had a blast. I loved it. It was fun. It was big. It was loud. It was the end of the earth. It was every Roland Emmerich, Michael Bay film, but done by a very, 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 very good director and filmmaker in about 2/3 of the time with better story development and non-racist robots running around.
Yep.
I had a ball. My wife enjoyed it. The friends we went with enjoyed it. I was glad to see people on Facebook say, hey, we're going to see Pacific Rim because this is a movie that people should go see.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
And really support a original, I guess, idea.
Oh, yeah, it's a love letter to Japanese kaiju films for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, they even call
and
giant
the mecha,
monsters kaiju.
Mech, or mech, I guess, not mecha,
it's
but mecha.
No, they call it mecha.
But
yeah, it's a love letter to Japanese craziness. But,
yeah.
I mean, it's still an original property.
So,
at the very least.
I thought it was a blast. I thought it was one of the better movies.
Fantastic.
At this point, I haven't seen a lot of summer movies. I saw most of the bigger ones. I think for now, Star Trek still sits at the top, just because of the performances. But a close number two is Pacific Rim for me. And so that's that. The other thing, I've been on this British TV kick, so I've been watching all these Sherlock and Luther in the fall. Last Monday, I wasn't feeling great. I got off work early. And I went home. It was a rainy day. And to me, that said London. It was a rainy, foggy day.
Yeah.
You know, it's London.
It's
no
been
good
London here for about a week.
About London.
The weather's been weird.
London crime films.
Yeah.
So I proceeded to watch Rock and Rolla.
Yeah.
Starring Idris Elba, Gerard Butler, Tom Hardy. That's
Handsome Bob.
God, everybody else.
So good.
Such a good movie.
That's an underrated
great cast.
Guy Ritchie flick.
Yeah. It was a blast. Then I followed that with Layer Cake, starring Daniel Craig, the movie that got him the role of Bond, with a intense version of Dumbledore, Michael Gambon, just tearing it up.
And who else is in Layer Cake? Layer Cake's
Layer Cake,
flick.
Tom Hardy.
Tom Hardy,
again, makes an appearance. Bunch of British go-to guys that I can't think of.
It's a good flick, man.
I'm trying to think who the... Because Michael Gambon's not the main... Old, I don't know. There's a bunch of old people in it.
Anyway.
And then I followed up my little movie marathon with Sexy Beast, starring Sir Ben Kingsley,
Ray Winston. Got an Academy Award for that, didn't
I believe so, supporting. That one, story-wise, I think was a little weaker, but performance-wise, very, very good. It also had Ian McShane.
It's very much a tone piece, I think, in a lot of ways.
But it was a good day of movie watching, I thought.
Hell so yeah, man.
That was a good day, yeah.
That was my week.
Nice. Well, Dalton, sir, what's got you fired up this week at Pop Culture?
Well, obviously, last week I was fired about it. I'm still fired about Pacific Rim. I think it's easily the best summer blockbuster this year. I think it's very much, as Arthur said, it's big fun. I was going to say big dumb fun, but it's not. It's big smart fun. And I think summer blockbusters have been on this weird thing, and I don't want to single out Dark Knight or anything, but every summer blockbuster's tried to be Dark Knight since 2008.
True that.
And I tell you what, not every big movie needs to be ponderous. Not every big film needs to be melancholy. Not every big film needs to be anything but big and fun and hopefully smart. And that's what Pacific Rim is. It is an incredibly intelligent film. It is an incredibly fun film. It's just a blast. It really is. If you love giant monster movies, and why wouldn't you? Go see this movie. I said it last week. Giant monsters, giant robots, Guillermo del Toro, the hell more do you want? And, even outside of those things, I think it's just a well-structured film. And, I think it's fun. It looks good. Sounds good. It plays well. I saw an IMAX. Freaking sweet. Go see it. Outside of that, I'm also fired up about the new FX original series, The Bridge, based on the Swedish and Danish co-production of the same name, in which a body is found on the El Paso, Texas border, the El Paso, Texas, Juarez, Mexico border, directly in the middle of the border. One half of the body on one side, one half of the body on the other.
Nice.
Turns out, two bodies, one from the U.S. on the Mexican side and one from Mexico on the U.S. side. Craziness ensues. It's pretty great. I've only watched the pilot. It stars Diane Kruger, Glorious Bastards fame, playing El Paso homicide detective, and Damien Bashir from a big-time Mexican actor. He was in a film that was apparently sad, very good. Last year, I can't remember the name. It was like a year before Beautiful. I can't remember the name of the damn film. I think maybe it's a better. I don't know. It's about a Mexican day laborer, and apparently it's fantastic.
Oh, where he's the worker in the truck.
Yes.
I know what you're talking about.
He's a palm tree cutter.
Yeah, I know what you're
in
talking
California. It's supposed to be really good. You'll Google him, it'll be like one of the third things that pops up. He was also on a couple seasons of Weeds. Great actor. Really awesome. It's a good show so far. I really like it. I can't wait to see where else it goes. Last thing I want to talk about is the latest Netflix original series, Orange is the New Black. Speaking of Weeds, from the creator of Weeds, Jinji Kohan, I'm not sure how you say her name, it's a very cool looking name. This show is fantastic. Guys, I cannot overstate to you how good the show is. It is smart, it is funny, it is an indictment of the American penal system, it is subversive, it is basically all the things that were good about the first two or three seasons of Weeds before it turned into a piece of crap. The show has just got a lot of heart, it's got a lot of wit. It's just good. It's good television.
Is it better than Hemlock Grove?
Oh, it's about 1,000 times better than Hemlock Grove. Did you ever talk about how much I hated Hemlock Grove?
I don't think you did.
There were three episodes in, and I was like, I'm done with this.
I saw it through the end, much to my own chagrin.
It's not even bad enough to be campy. Like, that shit is garbage. No, Orange is the New Black is fantastic. And there's just so many great characters in the show, so much great character development in the show. It's got Kate Mulgrew from Star Trek Voyager as a Russian cook. That's awesome. There's a chicken. There's a whole episode where they see a chicken in the yard, and the whole prison goes out hunting the chicken. There's a joke about somebody's afraid. She goes to prison. She's afraid. I forgot to tell you the conceit of the show. The idea of the show is that this upper middle class suburban white girl, as part of a relationship she was in after she got out of college, may or may not have transported some drug money once. Well, it turns out there was a federal case against the international drug ring she helped out. Now she's got to go to jail for a year. And she's afraid of getting beat up. And one of the warden of the prison says, "This isn't Oz. Women fight with rumors and gossip." And I just thought that was so funny. And it's such an interesting show. I love the show. I want to. There's so many great lines. I'm going to run one of the ones I love by you. A inmate who goes by the name of Tasty complaining to the warden because them damn white meth heads have taken her TV time. She says, I can't watch any more Toddlers and Tiaras. I will not stand for the sexualization of little babies, even if it's some of them sequin dresses do be on point. Yeah, this show is freaking awesome. It's hysterical, but it's also just a really, really smart show. It's got a lot to say about the human condition and about what imprisonment does to us, both as a society and as individuals who are incarcerated. So that's what I got for you. I'm very fired up about that show.
Nice.
Yes.
Did there one last thing? One more thing, I'm fired up about.
By all means.
Sorry.
No, you're fine. I just remember this while you're talking. So, for many moons since the dawn of Twitter over on civilization, the theater at Penn Square Mall has been, for lack of a better term, ghetto, quote, end quote.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of a junk theater, like 8 screens.
Yeah. AMC went and bought it out, whatever theater chain it was. And for a while, it was similar. I mean, the theaters were still poor condition, but AMC banner. AMC is completely remodeled. All theaters feature reclining seats, numbered, where you can reserve. You can go online.
All theaters.
You can go online. I'm assuming I've been to 2 different theaters, and they're both the same way. But you can go online, and you can pick the seats you want.
What?
And reserve them.
Not
so you can have
E8,
seating. E9, E10.
So it's like balcony seating in the Warren.
Yeah. But the entire theater.
Oh my God.
There's like 6 feet between rows so you can stretch out.
Are they all smaller theaters then?
They're longer, I think.
Is it still only 8 screens?
I'd assume so. I don't think they've added screens.
Wow.
But they have, I would say there's probably 12 rows, 20 seats maybe?
12 rows, 20 seats. So it's actually, so there's
a good size.
Well,
I mean, it's
okay,
a decent
size.
The nice thing is, though, I saw Pacific Rim on the second row, which isn't a bad thing when you can lean back all the way and look straight up at the screen.
That's immersed, right?
So there is, I believe, probably no bad seating.
Wow.
The other thing is they're coupled like love seats almost. So you have A and B.
Much like the Warren Valley.
Yeah, and the armrest opens up, and those two connect really nice and cuddly, and then it goes on down the row. I would highly suggest, I think the rates are the same as AMC and probably cheaper than the Warren.
Oh,
balcony.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I think the rates are the same as the AMC at Quail Springs, and it's a much better theater.
But you probably can't get to drink on. Can't.
Bring it in yourself, I guess.
I'm sorry.
There are ways.
I'm a Warren devotee, and not just because I used to work there. If anything, the fact I used to work there and still love the theater should speak volumes.
Nice.
Dustin, what are you fired up about?
I'm fired up. Okay, first and foremost, as has been mentioned, I must chime in to the chorus of praise to Pacific Rim. And I think the movie is great. I think it is far greater, perhaps, than we realize at this moment. What I want to do right now is I want to read a little bit of criticism from another film. And I want to ask you, gentlemen, if these statements do not equally apply to Pacific Rim.
Okay, go ahead.
You're on this
piece. You're not going to tell us what the film is.
No.
Okay.
I haven't mentioned the film's chief sleight of hand, which is that, unlike most super popular movies, it makes itself into something fashionable enough to prevent buffs feeling like schlocks when they join the line. This done quite deliberately by looking back into the past rather towards the future, referring to references to other movies.
Yes.
Every conceivable convention of genre is shamelessly brandished rather than concealed.
Mm-hmm.
It's an incredibly knowing movie, but the filching is so affectionate you cannot resent it. Whatever else you think about it, you can't but call it the height of originality. The entirely mindless, could go see it with pleasure. But it plays enough games to satisfy the most sophisticated.
Absolutely.
It's difficult to judge the performances in a film like this. I expect that most of the time the actors had to perform with the special effects were later added in afterwards. Yet everyone treats his material with the proper combination of solemnity and good humor to avoid condescension. Applicable?
I'd say that's definitely applicable.
It's an anthology of much of actual scenes of an almost subconsciously recalled sensations and the sentiments of filmgoers from their memory. Maybe it is more than anything else, it inspires fierce loyalty. It's very silly, of course, people might say, but it's oh so much fun.
This is, I mean, it's just, I can't agree with that more. It's a purely joyous and imaginative film.
It is a kid playing in a sandbox with his toys.
It's a cartoon show, and not in a bad way.
Yeah.
It is, I mean, the Russians are as Russian as they can be.
Yeah.
It's, they're, everyone in this film is a cartoon character, and everything on it is a Saturday morning cartoon,
oh,
but in a good way.
Do let me read the last
snippet.
This comes from the Washington Post.
Oh, okay.
It's achieved a witty and exhilarating synthesis of themes and cliches from comics, serials, less-than-expected sources, westerns, pirates, aerial combat, samurai films, and it draws upon a variety of action movie sources with unfailing deftness and humor. It refurbishes stock scenes, conventions, spare parts acquired from a variety of action movie heroes, which assume an affectionately parodistic and miraculously fresh configuration. The director borrows, embellishes, and satirizes, and makes everything better.
Is this the Washington Post review of Star Wars?
It is.
I am awesome and good at all things. It was samurai films is what tipped me off.
And this is the Star Wars Episode 4 reviews. Every single word of them are applicable to this film.
Truly.
And I just want to say, this movie is good. It is great.
I think that's a good comparison.
It's a fantastic. It is.
I think it's a very fair comparison.
You know, I want to live in that world some more. I want some sequels. I want some things.
We don't deserve this film, and I'll tell you why we don't deserve this film. This film opened at third at the box office, behind Grown Ups 2. We don't deserve this film. This film is better than us. America. This movie should have only opened in Japan, somewhere where people would have appreciated this freaking movie. Not that I, like, have any love lost for Japan. I think their popular culture is bonkers. That means... I'm sorry. It's not... It's xenophobic, not racist. Don't look at me that way. I'm sorry. My point is, America does not deserve this film. Every time I talk to a non-moviegoer, like a casual moviegoer about this film, you know what they say? Well, it's dumb.
Yeah.
What the hell is wrong with you?
I have tried to sway everybody I've seen about it. Go see it.
Don't
ask questions. Just
go. I don't know if it's the marketing or what. I think people just don't understand why they'll like this movie. And I guarantee you will like this movie. It is head and shoulders above everything else that has come out this summer season. Hands down. Because it's not trying to... It doesn't manipulate you by invoking our real fears. The real bad things that have happened to us in this world. Since 2001.
Right.
The real bad things that happened on September 11th that have been invoked in pretty much every other summer blockbuster this year, not invoked here. I think at the very most, maybe Hurricane Katrina is invoked in this film.
Perhaps, yeah.
But this film does not, you know, it's not trying to manipulate you by showing you recreations of real-world tragedy. It's trying to entertain you and enthrall you by being big and imaginative and self-aware. And I took away from your time. I'm so sorry. I got distracted. I love this film, and I'm so pissed off that it did not do better at the box office.
No, that's fair, and that was part of my ranty rant as well, so I would say very, very similar things. But Pacific Rim is good. It is Star Wars. It may not get it because of, again, that whole popular that we're seeing.
I'm really hoping word of mouth picks up.
But it really is. It's Star Wars level. It's a world I can inhabit. It's a world I'd want to see sequels. I would want to see comics and fan fictions and animated series. And I would love for more of this sort of stuff to keep happening. And it's got something about the unity of human beings.
Pacific Rim, the animated series, would be the shit.
Wouldn't it, though?
Oh, man.
You could do that whole Clone Wars thing, but go back to, like, the beginning of years and do the whole type.
I would totally want this to happen. Guillermo, I hope you're listening.
Man.
Because it would honor us greatly.
So good.
The other thing that's got me fired up this week is a recent release in hardback of a book. I have William Shakespeare's Star Wars.
Go on.
Indeed, it is.
Speaking of Star Wars.
You've got my attention. You had me at Shakespeare.
Written in iambic pentameter, in elevated language, it is the entirety of Episode 4, the story of a young squire under the tutelage of a knight to save a princess from a dark lord.
Do you have a passage to read for us?
You know, in fact...
Is it written in play form?
It is completely written in play form.
God bless us, everyone.
So let me give this little bit of reading here. I believe this is where Luke is deciding not to go with Ben Kenobi. He just met Ben, but he's so far away, all those lines. And this is what he says. Now I'm split in twain by fate's sharp turns, two paths. One toward adventure leads, the other taketh me back to my home. I have, for all my life, longed to go hence. And now this Obi-Wan hath reason given why I should leave my Tatooine and fly into the stars.
Oh, God.
So this is just episode 4.
This is just episode 4, correctamundo. And it is very, very good stuff.
Did Han shoot first?
I have to look.
I'm looking it up right now. Hold on. That's exactly what I'm doing. Give me a second.
I have no idea. I did not even go to check. That's hilarious stuff. I'm sure there is a Greedo Cantina line. Forsooth, I think Dalton has found the passage.
I have indeed found the passage where we shall, in turn, learneth whoeth shouteth first. I read from page 75. Enter Greedo, stopping Han Solo as the latter begins to exit. Nakunta chunta solo. Yes, indeed, good Greedo. I have planned to make my way unto thy master. Tell thou Jabba, plain, I have obtained his money. Sung speech lay, ma la tom tran kum pa pa pimishi. Nan Jabba wing chukapamashtu. There's no translation here, by
this
the way.
This is all the Huttese, yes.
Yeah. Dang yung yang wanushka. Tis true. Yet this time, is the money truly mine? Kile chalak chukon tun ting ting. Kunungus. Aside, this bounty hunter doth try my patience. Even better. Aside, this bounty hunter doth my patience try. To Greedo, nay, I have not money with me now. Tell Jabba, Greedo, Jing dong wing ai la garu, bayonara, shonung papi ipi. But even I, from time to time, have boarded been. Dost thou believe that ere I had the choice? Drow Jabba, nam pakni abi ampana. Nay, not that. The day when Jabba taketh my dear ship shall be the day you find me a grave man. Nayun chunuma, chipekash nufa. Na chingo, kean kanto. I'm not very good at Hadith. Ah, true. I'll warrant thou hast wisheth this day. They shoot! Greedo dies! To innkeeper. Pray, goodly sir, forgive me for the mess. Aside, and whether I shot first, I'll ne'er confess. This is the best thing that has ever existed on planet Earth, Tatooine, Coruscant, or Hoth.
I thank
you. And the moons of Endor.
I thank you, dear listeners.
So, please, dear listener, pick up William Shakespeare's Star Wars, and I do have a wish, if I can have my one TED Talk wish.
Go ahead.
I need a theater troupe to put this on, because it's fantastic, and R2-D2 has asides
that are not in beeps.
He speaks in beeps, and then, like, 3PO goes into the pod, and R2 speaks.
That's awesome.
It is fantastic. Fantastic. And
oh
so,
my gosh.
Very, very
guys,
fun.
So
and they're all the fun little references. I mean, the little section you read, The Grave Man, right? That's from Hamlet.
Yeah.
And so, those.
I remember that. And then, well, and there's both references to the works of the Bard. Just in that passage, there's reference to Star Wars fandom with the Who Shot First thing.
Mm-hmm.
You'll find me a grave man from Hamlet.
It's got awesome illustrations.
It is illustrated.
Arthur just showed me an illustration of Jabba the Hutt. Wearing what I can only describe as traditional Elizabethan sleeves and nothing else. And a hat, I'm sorry.
Well, it pleases me when what gets me fired up in pop culture also fires up my co-hosts.
Oh my gosh, guys, that's Dustin, thank you.
quite a lot. A lot of course, Clone Trooper, I knew him not.
Is that actually a thing?
It is a thing.
Holy shit.
Alas, poor stormtrooper, I knew ye not. Yet have I ta'en both uniform and life from thee. What manner of a man wert thou? A man of infinite jests or cruelties. A man with helpmate, and with children too. A man who hath his empire served with pride. A man, perhaps, who wished for perfect peace. Whate'er thou were, good man, thy pardon grant unto the one who took thy place in me.
Guys, I think we could easily put on a community theater production of this.
I would love to see that happen.
Mostly, I just want to railroad everyone that auditions so I can be on Solo.
But anyway.
Jabba, I've got his money. Sorry.
That is what's got me fired up this week in pop culture. And I think it's been a good week for all of us. Do tell us what's got you fired up this week in pop culture through those various means of social media. We want to keep the conversation going because that's really what the movies are about, is keeping it going. And we're going to keep it going even next week. Next week, we're going to watch a little film from 1994, I believe, or three.
I believe it's 1994.
Yeah. Brandon Lee starred The Crow. It is a cult film. It is an action film. There's a bit of a fandom there. And we're looking forward to looking at this film and giving it some analysis. And
I'm I think we talked about on the show how much love we have for this film. And I think it's about darn time we did this.
Indeed. And so it will, and we will see you when it happens next time. Until then, watch movies somebody you care about. Have a great conversation, and keep the conversation going. Until then, we'll see you.
I enjoyed Mark LeFanu's article on Boris Barnet, Revolutionary Road, SNS August. However, I did have some concerns about his comments. He seems to equate sound on film with audible synced dialogue. This is only part of its contribution. It also includes noise and the music that was once performed live alongside the screening.